Thank you for coming. I'm delighted to be here. Actually, it's been a while since I've read Montreal. So thank you very much. I'm going to start by reading from The Polymers, and then I'll read from a book that I'm working on right now that'll come out next spring that I'll explain to you in due course. Well, hello. Hello. Hello from inside the Albatross, with a windproof lighter and Japanese police tape. Hello from staghorn coral beds waving at the beaked whale's mistake, all 6 square meters of fertilizer bags. Hello from can-opened delta gators taxidermied with 25 grocery sacks and a Halloween Hulk mask. Hello from the zipped-up leatherback who shat bits of rope for a month. Hello from bacteria making their germinal way to the poles in the pockets of packing foam. Hello from low-density polyethylene drop stones glacially tilled by desiccated bowel-obstructed camels. Hello from six-pack rings and chokeholds, from breast milk and cord blood, from microfibers rinsed through yoga pants and polyester fleece, biomagnifying predators strafing the treatment plants. Hello from acrylics and G.I. Joe. Hello from washed-up fishnet thigh highs and frog suits and egg cups and sperm. Hello. Well, this book is called The Polymers. Polymers are, simply, giant molecules made of numerous repeating parts. And they exist in nature, biologically. So your hair, your skin, your DNA, these are polymers. But of course, the plastics that we're familiar with, made from hydrocarbons, made from oil derivatives, these are polymers as well, usually variations of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, sulfur, various other chemicals as well. So as prevalent as polymers are biologically, plastic as a cultural and industrial commodity is similarly omnipresent, as you know. To me, however, its ubiquity marks an interesting contradiction. Plastic is at once outmoded and yet futuristic. It's colloquial and yet scientific. It's a polluting substance that's also intimately associated with our lives. It's inside our bodies. The origins of plastic as an industrial material have extended and continue to extend out of attempts to mimic or substitute things for things in the natural world, like pleather, for example, among many other things. Therefore, plastic marks both the presence and the absence of natural objects, embodying tension between the literal and the metaphorical as it recreates the world as a translated or alternate reality. Plastic, for me, and certainly the way I wanted to think about it with this book, constitutes, it seems to me, a form of writing. So I wanted to think polymers as forms of writing. Plastic constitutes the material language with which we write our contemporary environments, food packaging, clothes, furniture, civic infrastructure. So in writing the book, what I did was I looked for ways to read and write this writing by looking at cultural formations and social practices. I looked for examples in these realms for repetitions, accretion, accumulation, iteration, these sorts of things, looking for polymeric structure. So I looked at arguments, trends, fashion, these sorts of things, where things are built on units that repeat over and over. So I'll read some examples of this. The book is structured according to the 7 most common synthetic resins. And you know this, you know these resins if you've ever turned over a water bottle or some piece of plastic and you see that little chasing arrows triangle. There's always a number between 1 and 7. And those numbers simply indicate the particular resin that that material is made from. So number 1 is polyester, numbers 2 and 4 are polyethylene, number 3 is polyvinyl chloride, number 5 is polypropylene, number 6 is polystyrene, and number 7 is other. I'll get to that in a little bit. So one of the places that I looked for polymers is in language, in rhetorical structures. And I came across a rhetorical form called polysyndeton, which some of you might have heard of. This is common in the Bible, actually, and it's the repetition of conjunctions in close succession for rhetorical effects. So you get and this and that and this and that, etc. In the Bible, you get all these ands piling on top of each other. And it seemed to me this was an example of a kind of linguistic polymer. This poem is called Obsessive Compulsive. I should mention as well, there are some visual poems that are in the book as well that I'll show behind me as I read. Obsessive Compulsive. Make a roof for the people, and the people walk down the street with resin for a roof, and the roof has magnesium in it and sulfur, and the people walk down the street with resin in their hair, and resins are always falling from the sky to the ground, and the birds make a people in the sky, a people of the resin, and the resin is composed of sky, and it composes the sky, and the people walking down the street are the strings of resins, and covering their hair with their arms, with newspapers, with umbrellas. The people are the birds of resin, throwing their landings in the air like people for whom landings are uncommon, like people committed to the expulsion of landings. The resins coming down upon them like people driven out of countries discovered by resins, or that have discovered resins in veins in the countertops of suburbs, and people walk down the street with resins for hair, with countries committed to color, with the bonds between them, the birds circling, and people walking down the street with hunched shoulders so as not to look up and call the resins by name, call the resins in the name of the birds, the people circling and loosening. Plastics are constituted by subtle rearrangements of common elements, as I mentioned, carbon, oxygen, hydrogen. So you can have a chemical that has the exact same formula, but it's simply arranged differently, its molecular structure, so it becomes a completely different substance. So I was thinking about this, slight changes in the molecular relationship, and applying this to language as well, thinking about puns, about malapropisms and mondegreens. So this poem is a kind of linguistic isomer, another linguistic polymer. It's called Cigar, Toss It in a Can, It Is So Tragic, which is a palindrome. For all intensive purposes, the fire distinguishers are pigments of the imagination. Unparalyzed in the history of this great country, our enemies are holding us hostile. It bottles the mind to think that we take for granted the apples and organs hanging on tender hooks as opposed to bearing the blunt of the scapegoat gone awry with the crutch of the matter. Needless to say, at the pentacle of patriarchal politics, we cannot fathom the depths to which battering eyelids skewer the results to make ends meet. We shudder to think that a seizure salad made of fall foliage might as well be one foul swoop of poison ivory. In the same vein, we are in sync with the insinuendos and internally grateful for the poultrygeist performing the Heineken remover on a nation long stricken with the chicken pops. It is perhaps a blessing in the skies that the hewn cries sound like flaws in the ointment as we cease the day, utterly disappointed by the ludicrous bowl in a china shop and its new leash on life. So the last section of the book is number 7. This is a giant category now. It's all the plastics that have just been invented. We're just learning about how terrible they are, but in terms of their toxicity. So what I wanted to do, though, with this section of the book was see if I could invent a plastic. And so specifically, I wanted to see if I could find a polymer within an existing text. So I looked at historical texts that themselves are polymeric, which is to say they're famous or infamous and they've repeated throughout history for various reasons. So I looked at famous speeches, I looked at controversial books, I looked at all kinds of different things to try to find texts that I felt were examples of this kind of cultural polymer, texts we look to as examples of ideas that have been important. So or infamous, as I say. In the end, though, so what I did was I subjected all of these texts to various sorting procedures. I looked for word length, I looked for word occurrence, I looked for grammatical formations. My attempt was, I was kind of feeling blindly through this, but I wanted to try to find a way to turn textual information into atomic information. And I worked with a chemist because I wanted to see, when I finally developed a procedure, I wanted to see that the molecule that I created, it is imaginary, but it could be real. And I wanted to know what its properties would be. I worked with a chemist to help me with this, to do some research on this. So in the end, only two texts worked for me. One was Darwin's The Origin of Species. I was able to discover the polymer at the heart of that document. And the other is the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, oddly enough. So I'll read that one for you now. I call the molecule that is at the heart of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, I call it polyfederal siloxane. So the last part of the book actually is these two short little essays, the kind of pataphysical essays. The Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms represents an important milestone in modern material science. For the first time, a silicone-based polymer was used as the basis for a human rights document. The details of the composition's chemical structure reveal the consequences of this decision. There are 14,748 words in the Charter. Rights is the most frequently used noun, occurring 35 times. The longest word is notwithstanding, which appears 3 times. The shared letters between these words are S-I-G-H-T, with the dominant element silicon, producing the polymer. The distinctive branching pattern gives this plastic its unique characteristics, which you can see here. This is where I put my lab coat on. I need my laser pointer. The Magna Carta, the Abrahamic books, and the Declaration of Independence are all derived from organic chemistry. The vitalist polymers that underpin these works are a testament to the animating force of hydrocarbons and their crudely oiled futures. The Charter, conversely, is a mixed polymer made of branching organic groups attached to an inorganic silicon-oxygen chain. Quietly, in 1982, obscured by the Quebec question, inorganic chemistry entered the political picture, just as the first personal computer virus escaped, spreading a poem about cloned elk through infected floppy disks. Organic human rights assume that all people have a set of inalienable greenhouses used for assembly, conscience, franchise, and security of person. The individual is a glittering stone that makes a coronet splash when dropped into a wishing well, a figurine furnishing a mantle of athletic achievements. The age of polymers is a genital stage of articulated hybrids, campervans, and cyborgs. A human has the alien right to viruses in her genome, microbes in his gut, phthalates in her blood, pharmaceuticals in his brain, contacts in her eyes, and a battery against his heart. At such high molecular weight, the Charter's constitution both drips and bounces. Low chemical reactivity and selective gas permeability have made some reproductions into membranes with the polyvalent right to choose. Semiconducting properties make it possible to flash drive file-sharing alloys and same-sex storage. Poor control of vulcanization, however, has meant the potential for fracture, putting the mannequined right to implants at risk for autoimmunity. Notwithstanding these challenges, immaterial engineers are lined up around the block, dressed in silicone boots, gloves, and face shields, reflecting what they see everywhere they look. And there is the molecule I discovered at the heart of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, with its network of eyes watching us in an arc. Okay. I'm going to read now from the book that I'm working on. It will come out this spring with Coach House Books. And it extends my interest in chemistry and poetry. In particular, I'm interested in thinking about oil as a form of writing. And I know that oil is a form of writing because I can read it in my blood, my urine, and my intestinal tract. So with the help of microbiome and biomonitoring testing, I've shifted the scale and mode of what I think of as writing. I see my own body, the chemicals in my blood and urine, as well as the Western diet-influenced microbes in my stomach as forms of media expressing the biology of petroculture. There's a picture of my blood. I'll explain these in a moment. So with this, What I've done here essentially is I'm looking at the way the outside writes the inside in both necessary ways, certain kinds of bacteria. I mean, we rely on bacteria actually for our health. We've outsourced the production of certain important substances in our body to bacteria. We need them. If we didn't have them, we would fall ill. So I'm interested in the way the outside writes the inside in that respect, in necessary ways, but also, of course, in harmful ways when it comes to chemical pollution. So following various biomonitoring protocols, I've had my blood and urine tested for hundreds of chemicals, which you can see here, that fall under various categories, PCBs, phthalates, pesticides, insecticides, flame retardants, BPA, heavy metals. It's been a real joy. All of these chemicals are widely present in the environment, believed to exist in most humans to varying degrees. So what's inside me is also inside you too, generally speaking. I mean, this was the point of this project in a sense. There are differences with age and location, but generally what's inside me is inside other people as well. Moreover, in addition to testing various areas of my body, so my hands, my forehead, my genitals, and mouth for bacteria, I've sequenced my microbiome with the help of some microbiologists, obtaining a deep metagenome and virome characterization of a stool sample to determine not just the bacteria, but also the viruses and fungi in my stomach. So by focusing on the outside that is inside, my aim really is to draw attention to the coextensive, interactive nature of the body with its environment and the implications that this might have for entangling the human with the non-human and the personal with the global in environmental ethics. This is sort of what I've been interested in thinking about. And I should say that while I'm acutely aware of the way my body is certainly marked by various demographic privileges, I'm also interested in the strange democratizing power of this form of pollution and biological colonization. So as I mentioned, the chemical and microbial signatures may be different for distinct communities of people, but the chemicals and microbes are in all of us. Now, this is a picture of my sweat. You'll see pictures of my urine, my sweat, my blood. I think of these as examples of landscape photography, petrochemical landscape photography. You know, you might be familiar with Edward Bertinsky's giant pictures of oil refineries. I wanted to take pictures that look at the actual surfaces upon which some of these chemicals are acting, or the kind of excretory pathways they take from our bodies. So that's my sweat. As I say, I think of it as a form of landscape photography. So working with the hormone as a compositional method, which is what the book tries to do. The poems in the book deliberately combine biographical details, such as my exposure to various chemicals, my diet, lifestyle, etc., with historical details, famous spills, accidental poisonings, military applications, and attempted political assassinations, among many other things. Some of the most extreme acts of writing now being undertaken in the capitalist Anthropocene are being performed by petrochemicals, it seems to me. So it made sense to think of a book, my book, as an attempt to respond to this writing with a kind of expanded form of writing of its own. So this is what I have tried to do. All right, so I'm going to read some of this for you. There is a very long poem cut up in sections called Hormone that runs through the book as a hormone, ultimately, and the rest of the kind of chemicals fit in and around it as they would in a bloodstream. So I'll just read you a section from the Hormone poem. A few individuals gathered together constitute a crowd. 3 parts per million of bromine, 500 parts per million of benzene, 5 milligrams of arsenic, 500 colony-forming units per milliliter of tap water. In the sexual parts of material history, every belief has its crowd, and every crowd has its medium. Some crowds are slow and wander in the wilderness. Some include from the very beginning all the members they will ever have. It's not always the remoteness of the goal or the splendor of the pilgrims. Some crowds accumulate in the reproductive organs of their maxims. One lifetime reaches into the next like a glove. Casseroles, tea, die-ins at the strip mall constituency office, fruit stand vendor on fire. The crowd is created by the slow accumulation of what cannot get out of the way. Animals in herds were hunted for food, but also for the feelings their numbers gave the hunters. Let there be more of us, they prayed, and envied the buffalo meat that built railroads and fed wagon trains, the hair stuffed into furniture, shit burned for heat. Every nation feels it is promised the whole earth, and every nation sits atop a pile and waits. Specimen report. I didn't get your earlier email, Adam. Not sure what happened there. Please keep me copied on any correspondence. In order to test your body for the range of chemicals you've requested, you will need to send in approximately 62 milliliters of serum, equivalent to about 150 milliliters of whole blood, and approximately 6 milliliters of urine. Both the urine and serum should be sent in amber glass jars and cooled to below 4 degrees Celsius. Using the morning void would be best. There are no other restrictions besides making sure that the serum sample does not come into contact with any Teflon. And I'll read you a longer poem that that's in the manuscript as well, embedded within this hormone. And this is just a little introduction to it. It's about phthalates, this poem. Phthalates are in everything from personal care products, medical devices and food packaging, to children's toys, air fresheners, and building materials. Some of you might have heard of phthalates. They are added to plastics to make them soft and pliable, to cosmetics as a lubricant and penetrant, and to fragrances and other scented products to increase the longevity of smells. So that characteristic and often desirable new car smell is composed in part of phthalates off-gassing from plastic furnishings or finishings. Now, phthalates are estrogen mimics, so they behave in the body like estrogen. And as a result, phthalates can adversely affect the development of the reproductive system in mammals. They've been linked to infertility, lowered sperm counts, various reproductive tract malformations, asthma, obesity, and cancer, among many other things. This poem is called Skeleton Keys. And each section begins with an epigraph that has the level of phthalates inside my body. Skeleton Keys. Mono-2-ethyl-5-oxohexyl-phthalate, my urine level is 4.55 nanograms per milliliter. A stone rolled in front of a cave makes a mediocre lock. An alligator guarding a moat is more difficult to pick. Locksmiths don't call these locks any more than they would a chair wedged against a door. To make it legit, a key must appear. A combination, a password, a steroid, a mimic. Almost every key has a bow. To get her husband's bow from the storeroom, Penelope went upstairs to retrieve a key made of bronze with a handle of ivory. A lock is a psychological threshold. A key is a suitor who can shoot an arrow through a line of 12 axes. I am constantly losing my keys. Sometimes my kids take them. Everything required to put together a baby must arrive at precisely the right moment. This extraordinary sequence is accomplished by padlocks. Organs snap open and shut at each gate. I found them in the yard, under the couch, inside the microwave, and in the freezer. I found them outside, still stuck in the door. I found them in my other hand. Mono-N-methylphthalate. My urine level is 1.43 nanograms per milliliter. Key in lock and hand in glove and tongue in cheek and screw in bolt and butter and scotch and coffee and cups and dinner in the bell and periods and the reasons enumerated for failure in the fly's field of vision in the width of the web and the tick and the sweat gland, horses and the power and the guest and the host and the knock at the door and the grammar of the dancing reproductive success of the bee and the pollen and the allergens revolt and the mucus making converts in the cellular life of the trouble deciding inside from out and the shout and the rooftop and the drift and the gene and the spray that comes in from the crops and the air and the vents and the vent and the small hours after damage has been spent and weeping in the willow and empire and the fiddle and Balkan and the powder and dark horses in the running and the absence of questions and the wandering lust and the fire and the pine cone and the halo by virtues of passion and the fruits with substrates and the enzyme and penis and vagina and the hetero and normativities, reflexive complementarity and floor tiles and the embryo and raincoats and testicles and the call and the response and the response and the mouth that makes the call. Monoethylphthalate, my urine level is 6.46 nanograms per milliliter. Under pressure to be fearless, the male brain sweats in a jar. The two halves are drawing different conclusions. How are other people feeling? The male brain thumbs tacks. Having been doused in an embryo at the buzzer, the male brain is changed forever. It wanders into problems with a backpack full of explosives. Every night, a pilot light schools its flagellant arms race, annealing medals in its dismounted police. Having bravely stood in a javelin rain, the male brain turns a blow dryer on a friend's stream of pee. Though it will never admit to this, the male brain is tense that its tense is the future perfect. What will have been the means by which we mean? It squats in its skull like a cork. Mono-3-carboxyl propyl phthalate, urine level 11.8 nanograms per milliliter. I will not let go of your hand. No, I will not let go of your hand. No matter what, I've got you. Feel my hand. I've got you. Monobenzyl phthalate, urine level 4.63 nanograms per milliliter. Phthalates light small scented candles for explorers who have just arrived in this peninsula and are now inquiring after its name. The locals tell them they don't understand the question. The visitors repeat, "We do not understand the question," with great difficulty, pronouncing each word. "We do not understand the question," they say over and over, lifting the backs of their tongues. At the meal held in their honor, the newcomers propose a toast. "We do not understand the question," they declare, and point to the coast, their arms encircling the air above their heads, the backlit clouds, the smell of food and candles. "We do not understand the question." This is the last poem I'll read for you. It's for a bacteria called Enterococcus, which is in my stomach. It's in your stomach too. It's responsible for making about 90% of the serotonin in our bodies, which we require for our moods and personalities. So this non-human is very important for making us human. The poem's called Independent Variables. Next to the off-leash area after dark, a man struggles to release a dog from his car. A few snowflakes avoid themselves while falling. He's at the open door, fevering his weight. There is fur spilling over the steering wheel, jumping at his mouth, but there is no dog. A woman's head rises and falls, her hair mixing with the man's hand, her bra visible against her bare back. He moves in and out of her, and the snow moves in and out of the car, goosebumping her shoulder blades. They move together, changing planes in the endorphin airports that concourse through their bodies, that guided them to the edge of this park in the first place and left the map reading light lit to bathe them in the sepia mesh of historical arrival. Looking inside my body has done something to my body. This park and its no-dumping signs are reproduced in cities that reproduce on the edges of larger cities like galvanic corrosion. It's not possible to separate the form of desire from its material substrate. The engines rev and the undistributed world burns. It makes perfect sense to fuck here. I appear suddenly walking my dog as pointlessly corrected grammar in the bootleg snow, a dirty sentence diagrammed by the dial tone of the keys still in the ignition. Our eyes lock as I pass. Beyond the parking lot, I pick up after my dog. Through the thin plastic bag, I hold her shit and feel the temperature of the inside of her body. Thanks.